I didn't know there was a TV up here. That's wonderful. If the game comes on, I'll be sure to let you know what the score is. That is great. Y'all have really innovated since I've been here before. That's really cool. You can turn in your Bible to that scripture if you're not there already, because we'll get there in just a minute. Just a few things to say. I love being home. It feels like home. You treat me very well. I asked Dwight if you knew I was coming, and he said, no, I don't know if we told him. And I said, you need to tell him, because I think some of you might have said, wow, it's great, Tony's here, and others. I mean, you might have wanted to go somewhere else if you'd have known that. But I'm glad you're here. I so appreciate the shepherds who hired me and brought us here. I know none of them are shepherds now, but I really appreciate the shepherds you have now and the two that you just added recently. Love this church. It is family to us. My family's not here. They're back at Brookline. That's their home now, and our girls love going to class. Besides the two girls we have, they'll be turning 13. I got a 13-year-old in August. Whew! Besides the two we have a sweet little girl. We're foster parents, so if you ever see us around, you'll see a little infant. We've had her since, brought her home from the hospital. Good life. Life is good. If you don't remember my family or want to meet them, we're going to go to lunch later. I'll meet them at lunch. And if you want to buy their meal, that would be just fantastic. I'll buy my own, but you can buy theirs. And let me say this very seriously before I get to this, because I won't say this later on. If you don't know Jesus Christ, then we need to tell you about Him. And so even though I won't spend any time talking about Jesus, He's the whole reason that we live and that we preach and that we assemble. And so if you have never been united with Him in baptism, if you've not been covered by the blood of Him to cleanse you and make you whole, then you need to do that today. And so later on when we sing this song, you can do that. Just come let us know, or you don't even have to come up here, talk to anybody around here, any hour of the day, anybody would do it. I'd be honored to tell you more about Jesus. 1 Kings 17, as we read, you find Elijah opening up here with doing what God had told him to do, go to the brook, and he goes there and he drinks at the water and he's fed by ravens, an incredible story. The water dries up. God sends him on to Zarephath in Sidon of all places. Why there? I mean, 75 miles away. You have to cross a desert to get there. Why would he send him there? Because there's a widow there. And why there? Gentile territory outside of Palestine. Why there? Well, maybe the whole nation, maybe one man, a single prophet, needs to understand that God is going to take care of him and them. I don't want to pass up this because it's a great part of this, even if I can't explain it. Verse 9, God tells Elijah to go to Zarephath because I've commanded a widow to supply you with food. And that's amazing. That sentence. God has already planned it. The widow was going to supply Elijah. Elijah just had to get there. He may not have understood what he just heard, and I suspect the widow had no idea that he was coming, but God had already worked it out. And the future is unknown to maybe everybody in the story, but it's already history to God. He more than knows it. He orchestrates it. So that may be the best part of the lesson. We could just go home, maybe. I mean, how God does that, I don't know. But He does that because He is God and nothing's impossible with God. I can't explain it. I can't understand it, really. I just have to trust Him. So feel very comfortable about tomorrow. As a Christian in the hands of God, don't worry about tomorrow. I don't know what tomorrow will bring. You don't either. None of us can tell what the rest of this week or month or year will be, but God's already there working it out. So it may shock us, surprise us to wake up tomorrow or by the end of the year to find something out that devastates us, but it's not devastating to God. He's already there. I love that. What God may be doing with Elijah is testing him some more. Will he follow where God leads? Will he humble himself? Will he go to a foreign land and speak to these pagan idolaters and sit at the table of a poor widow and eat the last meal she has? God's preparing him for something. I don't know what. But you read the next chapter and you'll know the great faith he will need to do that. Well, probably you know the story. Before we even read this, Elijah goes there to find the woman. There's no indication he knows her, like, oh, there she is. There were no pictures, no internet. He just goes there, and there at the gate, there she is picking up sticks, and she knows what she's doing. It's very sad. This is her last supper. She's preparing it. She's planning to pick up the sticks, take it home, burn it, take care of the meal, one last meal. She and her son will eat it and die. Maybe not that day, maybe later on, but they are on the brink of starvation and they know it. This is it. They're done. And Elijah doesn't know it when he asks her for some water and some bread, but she tells him the story, and I think he didn't know it before, but after she describes what this is and why that would seem impossible to give him what she needs to eat and her son, he still says very boldly, "Well, make something for me first." It almost sounds like a male chauvinist pig, doesn't it? Get in the kitchen and you fix me first, and if there's anything left, you go ahead and eat it yourself. But this has to be a statement of faith in God. And then after you fed me, then you and your son will not starve and die. That's not what will happen. God will not let your flour and oil run out. So that wasn't insensitive at all. This is the best possible outcome. You just have to trust this. So until the rains come, you'll be taken care of. Just trust God in this. Now, I don't know why she would trust God in this. I don't even know if she knows God. But surely she knows something. Surely she has something. We'll talk about that in a minute. But it's amazing, right, that this foreigner, this widow, this woman and her son, stuck in poverty, ready to eat a last meal before they starve to death, you know what she does? I mean, it's crazy, right? First Kings 17, let's get to reading. Verse 15. She went away and did it. She went away and did as Elijah had told her. So it jumps to the end of the story. Then there was food every day for Elijah and the woman and her family even, maybe not just son. For the jar of flour was not used up, just like he said. And the jug of oil did not run dry, just like he said. In keeping with the word of the Lord, like he said, the word of the Lord spoken by Elijah. Incredible story. So she starts out with just a little flour in a jar, just a little oil in a jug, and that's all she has, just a little. And that's what we know, but what she also has just maybe a little of is faith. So I don't know if she's crazy enough to believe the impossible, but it looks like she is. She trusts Elijah. She trusts Elijah's God. Somehow she knows something, but probably doesn't know it. She just trusts it. That's what faith is. It may not have been much, but looking at her circumstances, it looks like it's all she needs, just a little faith to do the near impossible. Elijah said it, the widow did it, God fulfilled it. He did as he said he would do after the woman did what she was told to do, and the rest is history. I mean, it just says it right there in just a couple verses. Sure enough, her flour and oil would have been her last meal. Turns out it's not. It's Elijah's first meal of this new adventure, and her first meal with her son, her whole family for the rest of their days until the drought ends. And so we see it again as we see it all through scriptures. Here's the truth. God rewards obedience in Jews and Gentiles alike. God blesses faith found in any man and any woman, no matter their circumstances. God replenishes the resources of the faithful. He is good to his people, those who trust him wherever he finds them. He takes care of the needs of those who take care of his business. Did you know those things? Because this woman learned that. She didn't know it before. You should already know what Jesus says in Matthew 6. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. You know that, right? I mean, that's the truth. Psalm 34:9, fear the Lord, you his saints, for those who fear him lack nothing. Psalm 84:11, the Lord God is a sun and shield, the Lord bestows favor and honor. No good thing does he withhold from those whose walk is blameless. Did you know that? This widow did what Elijah asked, and as God promised, she was given the food she needed to continue living till the drought ended. What a story. And from then on, what did she have? This abundance of food, a warehouse stacked full of flour and jars of oil? No. No, it looks like she had just enough. Just enough. It doesn't say she had tons of material food to live on. She just had enough to make it through the day. each day. That's all she had. That's all she needed just every day, had a little bit more and just enough to get her through the day, and it never ran out. And that's, doesn't that remind you what Jesus said when he told them how to pray? Don't worry about tomorrow. Don't pray down the road. Just today, God. Just give me today what I need. Don't let my oil run dry. Don't let my flour run out. Just today, give me what I need. Well, in the story of Elijah and this woman, that would have been a great place to stop. If you don't know what happens next, it would have been better, I think we figure, if we just stopped there and said, and everybody lived happily ever after, but it doesn't happen that way. Well, you know what happens next? Are you familiar with this story? It should be just period, the end, but it's not. I've always thought the best movie would be one I would make, because I don't know if you're like me, but every movie, it seems, is predictable. You just look at the title, or watch the previews, or let a friend just start it for you. You can sit through the first 5 minutes and you pretty well jump to the conclusion. You know how it's going to end. They always end the same. I mean, I've been surprised a very few times. If I could make a movie, though, I think I'd surprise everybody like this. Maybe I've told you because I like telling this. If I had the money and I was a director and Hollywood welcomed me in their community, I would make a movie like this. Everybody sits down and they start enjoying the movie, and I've already made it. I just want to watch their faces as they get to know the characters in the first 5 minutes, played by the biggest stars. And everybody is starting to enjoy just the first 5, 7, 10 minutes. And all of a sudden, in a fiery blast, one big explosion, 10 minutes into the movie, everybody dies. And as the fire is everything is being consumed by fire, the credits start rolling. 10 minutes in, flames dance across the screen, the names are passed, and they're done. I mean, people still have popcorn in their mouth. They haven't even chugged their drink yet, and the movie is over. That would surprise people. Of course, they wouldn't like that. Everybody want their money back. But wouldn't that surprise you? You pay your money, you sit down with your popcorn, 10 minutes in, everybody's dead, the movie's over, go home. People would start talking, they would. They would demand their money back, but they would be talking about that movie because it would shock them. The end of this is somewhat shocking, 1 Kings 17. It's not at all how it ought to end. I mean, it starts turning a corner, and it goes from isn't that sad to isn't that wonderful to what has just happened. And that has to be what she is thinking. I mean, we're just now getting to know this woman. I mean, with just a verse, just a sentence or two, and we're getting to know her and the young man in her home. And I don't know how young he is, but her son. And we don't know them, but don't you already start to like them? First 10 minutes of the movie, the family's living on God's provisions. Their food doesn't run out. This poor foreign widow is rewarded for her faith, her kindness, her hospitality. Period. Story's over. No comma, dot, dot, dot. The story takes a bad turn. Commentators in a good Dateline would say it like this: something has gone terribly wrong. And it's surprising. It's shocking. It's not pleasant. But it's real life. And this is how it happens if you keep reading. Sometime later, the son of the woman who owned the house became ill, and he grew worse and worse, and finally he stopped breathing. She said to Elijah, "What do you have against me, man of God? Did you come to remind me of my sin? Did you come to kill my son?" Everything was going so well. A woman on her last leg with her last meal, given new life. She has hope. Finally, she has a future. And then it's stripped from her. Her life and her son's life were saved. And then all of a sudden, his is snuffed out. He's either dead or dying and about to die quickly. And if I know this mom, she'd rather die that day than watch him die. If Elijah is going to step into their lives and save their lives just so she can turn right around and bury her son after watching him die, then this is not fair. What is this, a joke? I mean, this is a cruel joke, and that's what she is pointing out here. You can hear her get more and more animated and more agitated as she speaks, or maybe yells at the prophet of God, "What do you have against me? What are you doing to me? Do I deserve this? What have I done to you?" You've heard those words, haven't you? From somebody in a mess like this, at their lowest point, maybe standing in a casket, yelling to somebody who will listen, or yelling to the heavens? Here's what I'm thinking about her. She's fully prepared to face death. She already knew it was going to be over. She was watching it run out earlier. So this is not a shock. But she didn't sign up for this. Not this. And when the prophet came along, she was already prepared to die. She was preparing for the end. One last meal. She'd made her peace. I think she was content to face death. So why did the prophet of God bring them out of that just to let him die? Why save them from hopelessness and then let her son die before her eyes? She would rather have perished, I think, earlier with her son than to live on without him. And this is the picture of hopelessness, a mother holding the lifeless body of her son, asking why. And don't you wonder, like her, what God is doing? I mean, is he teaching her a lesson? Surely there's a better way to teach a lesson. Is this his plan? Because it doesn't seem like a good plan. Is he punishing her? That's what she's asking. Is it her fault this is happening? Has the Lord lost control? Is he helpless to help? The prophet, can he do nothing after the first miracle? Can he not do something here? Did he bring her through this to bring her to this? Before we watch the prophet work a miracle, let's look at the woman's comments, because she knew suffering, didn't she? She knew suffering like I have not. She knew suffering like I suspect you have not. I don't doubt in this crowd this morning, some have experienced some of these things. But I would doubt there's anybody in our crowd. I don't know anybody who's faced this, who already lost a spouse, maybe early in life, who's now raising a child on her own. That maybe you have done. But then to face starvation, to really look death in the eye and saying, we will both die today. And then on top of that, now that's enough, but on top of that then to hold your dead body of your child. The dead body of your child. She did that. This woman knows suffering. She's held up under it to this point, but it's almost like this is too much. That's what she's saying. This is too much. I mean, this son who would take care of her, this son who would bear children, she would become a grandma, this son who would take care of her in her old age, this son who would be more than life itself is now gone. And all the pain piled up so vividly, probably showing on her face right now, in her words as she holds him and cries out to God's prophet, why? Why are you here? What have I done to you? Why do I deserve this? Is this your purpose, to remind me of my sin? Is this your purpose, to kill my kid? Is that what you're doing? I suspect she knows very well how sinful she was. She knows what you know, right? She knows what I know. The number of times in our lives that we have chosen to do what is wrong when we knew to do what was right. What was the last time you did that? 10 minutes ago? Yesterday? You want to pile on in my 47 years how many times I have sinned? I know my sin, as David said. My sin is ever before me. I'm embarrassed by my sin. This woman knows her sins. She's not claiming innocence. She knows what she deserves. It's not that she doesn't deserve this sin and wrath scheme as God has planned it. But, why? Did he come to save them, to remind them of judgment, and then to kill him? Is that all of this? This is life, you know. Is one of the hardest things to explain or understand in our world. This one moment in her life, I think, explains the difficult nature of life. Life is hard. Remember what Eliphaz says to Job, as the sparks fly upward, so man is, you know, it's trouble. Life is full of trouble. And you feel that, don't you? You get out of one thing, whoo, that's behind me now, and then you turn around and smack right into the door of the next reality, which is also equally terrible and maybe worse. And whether it's the death of a child or something else, we are left to wonder. And the questions don't come just from the ungodly. They come from believers. We believe. We hold on to faith. We are Christians, but don't be surprised if some of us, or all of us at different times in life, don't shout out to the heavens, why? Why do people suffer? Why do bad things happen? Why does God allow it? Why doesn't God do something? And you'll be sorely disappointed today if you think I have the answer to all those questions. I'm not even going to try. The interesting thing is that the Scriptures don't even try. The inspired writers don't lay out some wonderful plan of here is what God is always doing when life stinks. God is in his infinite wisdom didn't set out to explain everything to us. So please don't expect Him to. I mean, the story of Job explains that very well. We are simply to trust Him. So in this lesson, I'm not going to explain what God is doing in this woman's life or what's going on in your life. But I'll still try to encourage you this morning. Whether or not you know this kind of suffering, in some ways is irrelevant. All of us suffer. We know pain, different times in different ways, but still we are left to ask why. And with this woman, it's terrible what's happened. I mean, her human condition, her honest statement. It's tragedy. She's understanding the brevity of life. She understands the pain of life, but she doesn't maybe know any more than that. She just wants relief. We already know she has faith. She's proven it. That's why she's standing here alive with her son who used to be alive. But now here she is again, a woman of some faith, but in the heat of the moment, hopelessly shouting at the prophet as if it's his fault or by implication it's God's fault. And what it shows is she's human. We know what she says, but notice what Elijah does, because this is great. Maybe more shocking what he doesn't do, but let's read the rest of it. "Give me your son," Elijah replied. So he took him from her arms, carried him to the upper room where he was staying, and laid him on his bed. Then he cried out to the Lord, "Lord, my God, have you brought tragedy even on this widow I am staying with by causing her son to die?" And he stretched himself out on the boy three times and cried out to the Lord, "Lord, my God, let this boy's life return to him." And the Lord heard Elijah's cry, and the boy's life returned to him, and he lived. And Elijah picked up the child and carried him down from the room into the house. He gave him to his mother and said, "Look, your son is alive." And then the woman said to Elijah, "Now I know that you are a man of God and that the word of the Lord from your mouth is the truth." Did you notice Elijah doesn't answer her question? Did you notice that? I don't think it's because we don't have time for this, so I'm not going to try to explain it. I think he doesn't know. I don't think he understands what's going on either. So don't think just because you don't understand. Surely there's a deacon or an elder or a preacher who understands. None of us can explain what God is doing all the time. Her cries, I think, would not have been satisfied with an answer, even if he could have explained it. Sit down, sweet girl. Sit down. Let me explain what God is doing. I don't think she could have heard it, even if he could have said it, and I'm certain he didn't know it. Elijah doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't rebuke her for asking either. I'm guessing God hasn't filled him on any of this either. That's why he calls to heaven, and he asks the same kind of a question. Is this what you're doing? He didn't have an answer, but he held on to his faith. And I love how it ends, because he prays and God is faithful and the boy lives. And what a moment to hand that living child now back to mom. I'm intrigued that he offered her no statements in defense of himself or God. I think that's incredible. What are you doing? What is God doing? And Elijah has nothing for her. Not a word. And sometimes maybe if preachers try to tell you too much about what God's doing, you ought to listen a little less, because they may not know. Just trust God. Trust God. Here's the truth. If you live, you will experience pain in life. Don't even think you're special somehow. Oh, you don't know. You don't know what I've been through. I bet I don't. But I know there are others who do. Pain is normal. Life is hard for everybody. You don't have to start your own pity party. Just welcome to the party. We're all in it together. Not all of us will suffer in the same way, some of us more than others. But we live in a fallen, warped, sinful world. Everything is bent and messed up. just walk outside and look at the weeds and go ahead and say it. It's sin. Everything good from God has been tainted, and all of us and all of creation are adversely affected. We're living with it. And even if we fully believe in God, that doesn't give us a skip all the trouble card that we play down and go, ha, I don't have to go through that. We don't hop over the problems of the world. We're in the same world as everybody else. So what happened to this woman could happen to anybody, even you. And she may have thought, although mistakenly, that now that the prophet of God had come to her home, and now that God had supplied the great miracle to keep them alive, that from now on there would be no more troubles. Do you sometimes think that? You faithfully follow the Lord. You enter into the kingdom, the covenant, the church. And since you are saved, now nothing can happen to you. Smooth sailing, the worst is behind me. It can't get any worse. Don't say that. Don't say that. I don't know God's plan to bless you, and I don't know Satan's plan to curse you, but I know the battle is not over, not till I breathe my last, will I stop suffering in some way. I don't know how pleasant or how unpleasant life has been for you so far, but let's go ahead and be prepared. Be prepared. It may get worse. There's a good chance it will get worse. It may get better. I don't want to do a doom and gloom on you today, but suffering is not beyond us, and trouble is not banned from us, and we're not immune to danger. We're not safeguarded from tragedy. And I think you know that. Some of you could preach this better than I could, because you know that. There's no invisible shield around the saints so that God keeps everything bad out of our lives. It comes in. Everyone who has lived on this old globe will face trouble of some kind. Suffering and pain and death are equal opportunity devastators, and they will find you. Be assured of that. If this woman thought the miracle God provided her would keep her son alive, she was mistaken. Death comes, and sometimes it comes at the worst times, and we are left hopeless and helpless and devastated and crying. The point of life is not the trouble or the hardship or the suffering or the death. Those are circumstantial. The foundation of life is faith. Because the foundation of life is faith in God. God is the foundation of life. Really, life on earth is iffy at best. But what is permanent and lasting and eternal is God and the life that He offers. And anyone who trusts in God will be delivered through the circumstances, no matter the circumstances. No free passes, just a promise of life after the devastation has passed. And that perspective hopefully will get you through. I don't know what God is doing. She doesn't know what God is doing. Elijah doesn't even know what God is doing. But I'm grateful that God keeps doing something. I love the way the story ends, don't you? Because it ends very well. What's amazing to me here, though, as we close, is that God saves this woman from having to face something horrible right now. She saves His son. She saves His son so that she doesn't have to go to a memorial or a burial or a wake or a funeral. She has Him back. He's alive. No more tears. No more tears. God saves her son, but... let me finish that in just a second. There's this thing on the internet. It's a blog. It's already happened, but it's called Mitchell's Journey. And it's a dad who is writing about his son. Now, you can look it up, and if you have some tears, you can read it. His son was diagnosed with DMD in 2005. It's an ugly form of muscular dystrophy. Muscular dystrophy is already bad, but this is even worse. 100% fatality rate. Everybody's going to die if you get it. And he writes in the blog, this father, is he journeys with his son and the mom and the rest of the kids. But on the day that his son died, the day of the funeral, he says, it's okay, but not okay, and that's okay. And this is what he said. This is what he wrote. The funeral director told us it was time to close the casket, and suddenly I gasped for air and I tried to hold back my tears, but nothing could stay my sorrow. This was it. I wasn't ready to look upon my son for the last time to say goodbye to this sweet little boy. this boy I used to cuddle and hug and laugh with, my youngest son, Wyatt, stood there right beside me, watching me in my grief, sorry, tucking his older brother one more time. I carefully pulled Mitchell's favorite blanket up to his chin like I did every night, and I said, I love you, little boy, my sweetest son. Oh, how I love you. And I cried a father's tears. And until that moment, I had tasted no deeper tears. I had never known so great a sorrow as to say goodbye to my child. Sweet Mitch trusted that I could keep him safe from harm. He thought there wasn't anything I couldn't do. When he looked at me, he saw Superman. When I looked in the mirror, I saw a broken man, but I tried. God knows how hard I tried, but I was only human. A human father feeling helpless to save his beloved son. A woman who could do nothing to save her only child, her son. God saved her son. What's amazing to me is God knows pain. He knows the helplessness of death. We are unable to help ourselves. We're only human. But God could have saved His own Son. He wasn't helpless. He wasn't human. He wasn't hopeless. He let Him die. And that is the greatest story of all. God gave the woman back her son, and at one point in history, let His own Son die. You know why? Because He couldn't save His son and me at the same time. If I was to live, He had to die. If He saved His son, we would all be lost. And that is the greatest story of an incredible faith of a loving Father anyone could ever tell. I don't know if you need to come today, but you are invited. If we could pray, if we could help, if we could love you, we'll do it. Let's stand and sing this song.